workout in Fort Myers today for pitchers and catchers. Chris Sale spoke and said that he feels much more comfortable in year two in Boston in the spring than he did last year, and he's excited to just be able to hit the ground running. Celtics, they take the floor tonight against the Clippers. We'll have that game for you starting with the pregame, 7:30 over on 960 The Zone. Vermont native Amanda Pelkey will take the ice for Team USA in the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang tonight. They'll take on arch rival Canada, and that game will air at approximately 10 p.m. Eastern time. It will be live. It is the final game of the prelims, and these two programs, these two countries, are the only ones to have ever won a gold medal in women's hockey at the Olympics. The U.S. won the first one, and Canada has won the last four, so the U.S. looking to change that. Buster Olney joined us in the huddle in hour number two. If you missed any of that, you can find it on 1013ESPN.com. And should the Patriots go after Jimmy Graham in free agency? We discussed that also. Nate Burleson of the NFL Network and former NFL wide receiver, he thinks Graham would be a great fix in Foxborough. Champlain Valley Game Night is next. 1013ESPN, 1013ESPN.com. We're always streaming, so take us anywhere on the 1013ESPN app.
Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Wednesday. 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com going all the way until 7 o'clock. Celtics basketball, 7:30 over on our sister station, AM 960 The Zone. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. If you love the holiday, good for you. If you hate the holiday, good for you. Celebrate it any way you want to. What are people doing for Valentine's Day? Hit me up, 802-655-6672. I've got plans. I'm going home. Nice dinner is going to be waiting for me. I know Jess is, she loves to cook. She's good at cooking, and she wanted to do that, so I'm excited. I don't know what it's going to be. I'm excited for a surprise, so that'll be good. Whatever you're doing, again, you can get in on the Town Fair Tire text line. Intern Nathan's here, so we can take phone calls as well. Tell us what you're doing for Valentine's Day. Do you like the holiday? Can you not stand the holiday? What's it like being with Arnie and Beth on Valentine's Day? Well, you can find that out during trivia tonight at the City Sports Grill out in Colchester inside spare time. That's going to be a trip to see Arnie and Beth inside, to see what their dynamic is like on Valentine's Day. That's going to be pretty classic. That's can't miss programming. So head on over there. We got great prizes, 7:30 to 9:30. All sports on TV. The Celtics are going to be on TV out there as they take on those Clippers. So that'll be a lot of fun. Again, we do this every week at City Sports Grill, so head on over. And then on Friday, we're going to kick off our 101.3 ESPN Winter Craft Beer Tour. We're going to be at First Republic Brewery in Essex. That's going to be our first spot. Kevin and the guys there, look, I've been there a bunch of times. I love that place. Friday is pizza and a pint night. So grab a slice, come out, get some of that, some of their great craft beer. Really, really fun. And we're going to be $1 of each beer bought is going to be benefiting the SOAR Foundation, which helps warriors who come back from combat. So it is for a good cause. So come on out, support the cause, support us, support First Republic Brewery, and it's the first stop on our Winter Craft Brew Tour. As for what's coming up on the show today, is Jackie Bradley Jr. overrated? Yahoo Sports thinks that he is. We'll get into that in about 5 minutes. Justin Verlander throws some shade at the Yankees. I love that. Batting practice at 6:20, the best sound bites in sports. And Plattsburgh hoop coach Tom Curl will join us at 6:40. His team has won 15 games in a row. And if you haven't been paying attention, the Cardinals have more wins in a row than UVM does. They've got more wins in a row than UVM does. And at the Division III level, they're headed for a possible berth in the NCAA tournament. They're headed for possible hosting of rounds in the NCAA tournament. 18-4, they are averaging nearly 90 points a game, so we are looking forward to talking with Coach Curl. Ryan on the Town Fair Tire text line says, the family tradition of Valentine's Day fondue. I don't know what fondue actually is. It's some kind of chocolate, I presume, but Ryan, let me know exactly what fondue is. Doug in Hinesburg says, Brady, I took the day off and repainted and put up a new trim in our bedroom to surprise my wife. She absolutely loved it. Doug, that is going to earn you major Valentine's Day points. And congratulations to you for being handy, because I put together a desk for Jess about 2 weeks ago, and it's the most handy thing I've ever done in my life. Like, it's hard for me to hang a photo, usually. So congratulations to Doug that he was able to repaint, put up new trim in the bedroom, and surprise the wife. I once tried to paint my bedroom, and I ended up with blue painter's tape on the ceiling for months because, one, it was just too much of it. I put way too much of it on, and then I was too lazy to get all off, and I still ended up painting over all the areas that I had covered with blue paint. So handiwork is not something that I excel in. I know nothing about cars. I've gotten good at hanging photos. They're not always level, though, so that's something that I'm going to have to continue to get better at. I did just get a power screwdriver. I do have a toolbox that is continuing to grow, so I'm getting better. But cooking and handiwork, not things that I excel in. If you want to get in, you can. Again, 802-655-6672. Ryan says fondue is steak, chicken, shrimp, or any meat cooked in heated oil with many dipping sauces. So it has nothing to do with chocolate. So I was completely wrong on that. We do have a phone call coming in. Nathan, who we got? We got Alec. So you're talking about what you're doing on Valentine's Day. Alec, what's going on, man? Champlain Valley Game Night.
Hey, what's going on, Brady?
How are you? Good. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, perfect. So I'm hoping to go out with my sister and get my mom and her boyfriend some candy. And I'm just thankful, telling friends how thankful I am to have them.
Ah, well, that's great.
Yeah.
So, Alec, we appreciate you getting in. Ryan says fondue can also be chocolate with fruit, so you are correct. So, okay, then, good. So, basically, fondue is whatever you want it to be. So, that's fine, as long as I'm right. Alec is going to treat his family to, going to take his mom, go out with his sister, get his mom and boyfriend some stuff, and tell everyone how much he appreciates them. And look, and today's a tough day. A lot of you have seen the news as to what's gone on in Florida, the 18th school shooting this year. I don't want to get into politics. I want to be your distraction from that. But on a day like this, we could all use some positive vibes. So now we get into the show. Rumors out there from Albert Breer of the Monday Morning Quarterback that the Patriots might not hire a defensive coordinator. They might not give that title to Brian Flores as we thought they would. And Brian Flores is the current linebackers coach, the guy we thought was the likely successor to Matt Patricia for that position. And I got to shout out Aaron, who's been around the station a lot lately, and he's really been killing it on ideas and topic ideas for the show, and he's been killing it with research. And he brought this to my attention, and now he's right on this. Patriot fans should hope that they hire a defensive coordinator. And I know people say, well, Brady, they haven't always had a defensive coordinator. Bill Belichick did this for 2 years. You know, it didn't go so well when Bill Belichick, the defensive guru, was the Patriots' defensive coordinator. Get this. Back in 2010 and 2011, the Pats did not have an official defensive coordinator. They were grooming Matt Patricia for the position. Patricia was on staff, but he did not have that official job. He did not have that official title. Belichick was the guy who had his hands all over the defense, and it did not go well. Look at these numbers. These are astounding to me. In 2010, the Patriots, they went 14-2. This is the year they went 14-2, and they ended up losing to the Jets in their first playoff game in that big upset under Rex Ryan. The Patriots allowed 20-plus points 11 times in that season. 11 times in 17 games, the Patriots allowed 20 points or more, and that was at a time where scoring was not quite as easy as it is now. It was in the transition period to where scoring was easier. But offense now is easier to come by even than it was in 2010. And the Patriots allowed 20 points or more in more than two-thirds of their games that season. That's an issue. They were 25th in yards allowed that year. They were 30th in first downs allowed that year. And, oh, you think that's bad? The next year, with Bill Belichick being the architect of that defense and the sole voice in that defensive side of the locker room, 2011, the Pats 31st in yards allowed, 32nd, a.k.a. dead last, in first downs allowed, and they allowed 20 points or more 15 times that season. And that's the year they go to the Super Bowl and lose to the Giants. So what do all those stats tell you? In the 2 years where Bill Belichick acted solely as the defensive coordinator, and he did not have a right-hand man with that title, Patriots' defense was bad. They did get to a Super Bowl. They did not win a Super Bowl. And I understand that you don't have to just win a Super Bowl to be considered good. You can be good even without winning a Super Bowl. But those defenses for the Patriots, they were bad. The stats tell you those Patriot defenses were bad. And it doesn't mean that Belichick is a terrible defensive coach. We know that's not the case, right? They've been too successful for us to say that Belichick is a bad defensive coach. The Patriots have been too successful to go to that extreme. But this goes back to what Tony Dungy, former Indianapolis Colts head coach, Super Bowl winner, now you see him on NBC and Football Night in America. This goes back to what he told us in September when he was on our show. He said when head coaches call plays for one side of the ball, bad things can happen because there's just too much else going on in the game that if you've got your head in the clipboard all game long, you're not necessarily focused on everything that's going on around you. Is there a disciplinary issue on your sideline that you're not paying attention to? Is there a disciplinary issue on the field that you're not paying attention to? Do you need to speak to a referee, but you can't because you need to go and call plays now, and you can't get a conversation with a ref that's needed? Is there an injury that you can't address in the way that you want to? I mean, look at head coaches that call plays. Doug Peterson called the offensive plays for Philadelphia this year. It has worked. But, man, I bet the odds would be with what Tony Dungy said, that it doesn't work more often than not. Andy Reid had to turn over play calling duties in Kansas City this year. Too much was going on. The team's offense sputtered because Andy Reid had to try to pay attention to everything else. Ben McAdoo, he ended up getting fired in New York, but he called his own plays and he had to turn it over this year. Sean McVay got a ton of credit all year for what he did with the Rams on offense. And then the playoffs come and that offense sputters. Now, it's not necessarily McVay's fault, but it's just tough to be the guy that is supposed to be overseeing everything when you are fully committed to being over one thing. I think about it when I was coaching college baseball. I wasn't even the head coach, but I had a lot of duties. I wanted to call pitches. I loved calling pitches. I thought I was good at it. I was stubborn about doing it. I probably should have turned control over to the players. These guys were 19, 20 years old. They didn't need me babying them through every single pitch of the game. But at that point in life, I wanted to call pitches. So I needed to be sitting on a bucket looking at the catcher constantly. Well, what if I needed to shift over the defense? What if I needed to get a pitcher warmed up? What if I needed to tell a hitter to get loose? What if I needed to get a guy to pinch run? What if I needed to communicate with the umpire? What if I needed to take care of, there was a field issue? What if something was going on in the crowd? What if all of those things were happening? I couldn't address all of them with the vigor that I needed to because I was so concerned with doing just one thing that was all intensive, and that was calling pitches. So it doesn't mean Bill Belichick is a bad defensive coach, but it is a slippery slope when you take your head coach and just bury him in the clipboard on one side of the ball. I understand the Patriots want to continue to, quote, groom Flores, but you should hope that somebody has that title of defensive coordinator by the time 2018 starts, and you should hope that it's not Bill Belichick, because when it has been, the results haven't been good. Again, 2010, 20-plus points 11 times, 25th in yards allowed, 30th in first downs. 2011, it got worse. 31st yards allowed, last in first downs allowed, 20 points 15 or more times. One of those seasons ended with an embarrassing first-round loss or first-game loss to the Jets, and one of those seasons ended with what Patriot fans will tell you is an embarrassing loss in the Super Bowl to the Giants. You should be hoping that Bill Belichick is not the only guy who has his name attached to that defense in 2018. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN at 101.3ESPN.com. Again, Town Fair Tire text line always open, as is the TikTok Jewelers guest line. The Red Sox have a number of interesting pieces going into this season. Jackie Bradley Jr. is one of them. But to me, Jackie Bradley Jr. is not overrated. The Red Sox center field was put on the all-overrated team by Yahoo Sports writers going into this season. Jackie Bradley Jr. was put on the all-overrated team by Yahoo Sports. And I tell you what, I just don't see it. Our buddy Gordon Eads, who works for the Red Sox, so I get he comes at this with a biased slant, but he says, wow, I've said many times, Jackie Bradley Jr. is arguably the best defensive center fielder in Red Sox history. We're talking about more than 100 years here. And he ranks 12th all-time among Sox center fielders in OPS, which is on-base plus slugging, and he's only going to get better offensively. It's great that Gordon comes to the defense of Bradley like that, but I don't know that Jackie Bradley Jr. gets talked about in an upper echelon way enough to be overrated. Like, to me, Jackie Bradley Jr. is maybe the 7th or 8th most important guy on this roster going into this season. I don't look at him and say he's their best player. I've never looked at him that way. I mean, all of these guys, I think, are more valuable this season to the Red Sox than Bradley. Rafael Devers, what does he do in year two? Mookie Betts, how is he going to respond from a down 2017? Same thing with Xander Bogaerts. Same thing with Hanley Ramirez. On the pitching side, Chris Sale, David Price, Craig Kimbrell, they're all more important and more valuable in their performance to me than what Jackie Bradley Jr. does and brings to the table. You could throw in Rick Porcello as being more important to the Red Sox than Bradley. Bradley, I look at Bradley, he's exactly what I expect. He runs well. He plays good defense. He's a streaky offensive player. He's never hit more than 250. He's hit more than 250 one time. In, let's see here, what is it, 4 or 5 years as a starter, he's hit above 250 one time in his career. No one's ever called him a dynamic offensive piece, and if you're not a dynamic offensive piece, then you better do other things well. He does those things well. He plays defense and he runs. That's what keeps him in the lineup. Who is saying that Jackie Bradley Jr. is the best player in the league? If you say Jackie Bradley Jr. is as good as Mike Trout, then you're overrating him. But I don't consider Jackie Bradley Jr. to be on that level. I consider him in the American League, where there's 15 to 16 teams. 15 teams. I consider him to be probably the fourth or fifth most valuable center fielder off the top of my head. And defensively, I put him up there, you know, up there with Trout, and he's probably in the top two or three of defensive center fielders. I think that's a fair rating for him. Who is saying that Jackie Bradley Jr. is so phenomenal that he can be overrated? I haven't heard anybody say that. He's not the best player on his own team. He's not even the best player in his own outfield. That's Mookie Betts. Who's telling you that he's better than Betts? Nobody. How can you be overrated if you're not even thought highly enough to be considered the best player on your own team? I like Jackie Bradley Jr. I think we value him exactly as we should be valuing him. Streaky bat, some power, doesn't always provide with the bat, so what else does he do to help you? He runs well and he plays good defense. That's exactly how I look at him, and that's exactly what he provides. He's rated perfectly to me. Glove first, run second. If the bat comes along, then great. It's a great bonus. Champlain Valley game night here. Justin Verlander threw some shade at the Yankees because Chris Russo, Mad Dog Russo, on MLB Network said that, how could you not think that the Yankees are World Series favorites? And Justin Verlander retweeted it and said, I could think of one reason, with a think face emoji, a thinking man's emoji. Well, basically reminding people that, well, I can think that they're not the favorites for the World Series because we've already beaten them. So it's funny because I got people in the studio here laughing about Verlander. And I saw a ton of people on Twitter, a ton of Red Sox fans on Twitter, likely laughing at Verlander's comments trolling the Yankees. But you same Red Sox fans who love Verlander trolling the Yankees do not like Lane Johnson trolling the Patriots after. This is what is the hypocrisy of sports. It's okay when your teams do it, but not okay when it has it done unto them. It's okay when your rivals have shade thrown on them, but not okay when you do. Rich yesterday said about Lane Johnson, let it go, man. Let it go. It was a week ago. Did you really have to troll the Patriots? We're talking 4 months ago that the Astros knocked out the Yankees, and Verlander still throws the shade on them. This is what teams do. This is what players do. To the victors go the spoils. We don't have to love it, but part of those spoils is throwing shade on everybody else until you're knocked off the perch, and then we throw shade on you for being knocked off the perch. That's how this goes. Lane Johnson does it to the Patriots, and when the Eagles don't win the Super Bowl next year, he'll get stuff said about him, and everyone will laugh at it. That's the circle of life. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. When we come back, one of my favorite segments we haven't gotten to do enough lately, the best sound bites in sports. Who's saying what and what's going on? Batting practice, Champlain Valley Game Night.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You can always get in, 802-655-6672. We were talking, intern Nathan and I, in the break about Jackie Bradley Jr. and if he's overrated or not. I will say this. He came up with some good points, and he's right about this. We talk about Jackie Bradley Jr.'s defense. I said he's below Trout, but after that I put him in the next tier defensively, so is he overrated? Remember this, Kevin Kiermaier and Kevin Pillar of the Rays and Blue Jays, respectively, are both really good defensively. If you think that Bradley is better than both of them defensively, I would say you're probably wrong. I would say if you think that he's better than both of them, you're overvaluing that defense. Is he better than one of them? Maybe. But Pillar and Kiermaier are elite. Now, Kiermaier was hurt a lot of last season, so you didn't get to see it, but Pillar is phenomenal. And in Seattle, not to be a homer, they're pretty good defensively, too. They've got a couple of center fielders on that roster. They've got a lot of athleticism. You talk about Mitch Haniger's out there. He's not quite on the level of a Jackie Bradley, but those guys are, you know, Dee Gordon's going to play center field for the Mariners, so their true center fielders are on the corners. But I would say you overvalue his defense a little bit if you think he's the second best outfielder in the American League. But is he the third best? I think you can make a strong case for that. I still think Jackie Bradley Jr. is exactly what he's supposed to be. Glove first, run second, bat third. And if you're thinking that he's, if people are out there telling you that Jackie Bradley Jr. is 7 years for $170 million as a free agent, then they're not overrated. They just are uninformed. Champlain Valley Game Night right here. We haven't gotten a chance to do this enough lately. The best sound bites in sports. Who's saying what and what's going on? Batting practice next.
Champlain Valley Game Night. Batting practice.
Batting practice on a Wednesday. The Indianapolis Colts, after being spurned by Josh McDaniels, they had their introductory press conference for Frank Reich, the former offensive coordinator of the Eagles. What does he think about being able to work with Andrew Luck like McDaniels didn't?
To have such a supremely talented player with such strong character and such great humility and such a team-first guy is rare. I couldn't be more happy about working with the prospect. As far as what I've been told, you know, Chris gave the update last week. That's the update that I got, and that's all I needed.
So that's all you needed. Frank Reich wanted to be a head coach. I liked Frank Reich when I met him at the Super Bowl. I think he could do a good job with that offense, a good job with Andrew Luck. Again, the key is Luck's health, but the Colts, bottom line, they need to draft better. They need some offensive linemen. They need a defense. They need a running back that's not 172 years old in Frank Gore. They need a playmaker outside other than T.Y. Hilton. A good quarterback can mask a lot of deficiencies. And Andrew Luck, if he's healthy, can mask a lot of those deficiencies, but the Colts need a lot of help in a lot of spots. Frank Reich, I think, is good with the offense, and I think he'll be good for Luck, but they still are a long way away from competing. Not forget the Patriots. They're a long way away competing from the Jaguars and Titans and Texans in their own division. Pretty funny what Frank Reich had to say about, well, being the second choice for the Indianapolis Colts. Pat McAfee, former Colts punter and now a member of Barstool Sports, he asked him, do you love or hate Josh McDaniels, and what do you make of being the Colts' second choice?
As far as the second question, I'm going to answer that one just for you, Pat. The backup role has suited me well in my career.
And that's good because Frank Reich, as a lot of you know, intern Nathan's like, oh, that's pretty funny, but I don't really understand what it's from. Frank Reich engineered the greatest comeback in NFL postseason history back in like 1994 or so. He came in for an injured Jim Kelly. I know, he goes, I wasn't born yet. So an injured Jim Kelly in Buffalo, Frank Reich engineered them to like a 41-point swing in that game and led the Bills back to win. Nick in Plattsburgh says, hey, don't forget about Bradley Zimmer in Cleveland being an elite defensive outfielder. You're right about that. Bradley Zimmer is great, but Bradley Zimmer didn't play enough last year. He wasn't given the keys to the kingdom to be somebody that I'm going to say is better than Jackie Bradley Jr. He needs to play for a full 162 and not 72 for me to put him above. Nick's always trying to plug the Indians. Nick loves Cleveland so much, he's plugging the Indians at every turn. Moving on here in batting practice, we talked about Johnny Manziel earlier in the week and his revelations on both the Barstool Sports podcast, Pardon My Take, and we talked about him talking on Good Morning America. A couple of things that we didn't hit on Monday that I want to get to now. How close is he to being ready to play? He wants to be in the NFL, but is he training now? Is he throwing now? What exactly is Manziel doing? He talked about his throwing progression.
So I see kind of the how long it's going to take me to get back in shape, to get my arm right where it needs to be. And I feel like with what my timetable is for right now, I just need to kind of slow down on the throwing.
So he's saying I need to slow down on the throwing. He's working out, he said, 6 days a week. Last year he thought, you know, when he was kind of half-heartedly coming, trying to make a comeback, he went right into throwing. And he said he had a month-long throwing program, and it took him 3 weeks to kind of get in shape in that, so it was kind of wasted. This year, he's getting in shape. He's going to cool it on the early throwing, and then he's going to get into a point when he's ready. He's going to play in the Spring Football League, which is basically he's going to play in two games this April, and NFL scouts can attend or request film from that. Last year, 22 teams requested film from it. Imagine there will be a significant interest in Manziel and at least seeing where he stands. I want to say 12 teams actually attended the games, 22 requested film. So for Manziel, that's how he plans on attacking this offseason. He continued on to talk about the NCAA. This was on Pardon My Take, Barstool Sports. He talked about how he feels about the NCAA. Pretty opening from Johnny Football.
How much do you hate the NCAA?
Scale of 1 to 10, probably a 12.
They're still after you for talking to potential recruits for Texas A&M?
Yeah, so I get a direct message on Twitter the other day from Texas A&M compliance, and I haven't seen these messages since I was in college. I pretty much can't tweet at recruits, and I'm like, you know, what if I'm a fan of Texas high school football and this guy caught my eye and I just want to say what's up? Like, no, you can't. So I don't really know what I can and can't do. I guess they're officially calling me a booster or something like that, but I think they're just full of shit, to be honest. I think the NCAA is the biggest racket in the entire world.
And I think a lot of people would agree with him. I don't know about the entire world, but there's bigger shams in the world than the NCAA. But in the sports world, I think a lot of people agree with Johnny Manziel. And that is ridiculous. I mean, come on. If I see a highlight of an eighth grader do something cool and I want to tweet at him and say, hey, man, that's awesome. You know, cool. You could dunk before I could dunk. That's great. Now am I a booster? That's ridiculous. So, look, Manziel's made a lot of mistakes in his life. He sold his autograph when he wasn't supposed to. I get that stuff from the NCAA. But this, he's out of college. Ridiculous. He's not paying these kids. He's not fronting them so they go to Texas A&M. I think Manziel has every right to be irritated with that aspect of the NCAA. Moving on to Major League Baseball. Again, pitchers and catchers, they have reported. Aaron Boone, new Yankees manager, talking about the upcoming season.
We understand the expectations, and I think one of the things that's exciting for me is to hear some of those comments and to be around these guys as they've trickled in the last few days, as I've trickled in. Last year was great. A lot of these guys came of age and had a lot of, I think, viewed it as a very successful season. Just because things look good right now or things look good on paper and we believe we have a great team, it's also really hard.
Boone also continued on to talk about what he expects as a first-year manager and just how hard he's working.
I'm consumed with the job and being great at it and just hopefully impacting our guys that allow us to take another step as a club and ultimately become a championship club.
Now, that's what I like to hear. I like a lot of what Boone has had to say in the preseason. I liked a lot of what he said in his opening press conference. Now, I don't think that Boone, I don't think the press conference with the Yankees was done all that well overall. The press conference was pretty cumbersome But Boone, what he said, I thought said a lot of the right things. I think he's got a lot of expectations always in New York, but especially coming off last season. I like when he says, I'm consumed with the process of getting great at this. I think it's very, very key that staff around him, though, as I think it's important for Alex Cora in his first year in Boston. I also like what Cora had to say yesterday addressing the media for the first time. And this was the most enlightening thing about – this is the most enlightening thing that Cora said yesterday. When asked about how will you manage the team, what kind of team will you be, this was Alex Cora's creative response. I love this.
Besides that, you know, it's a day-by-day thing, you know, work on base running, work on defense, pitching, what I feel about, you know, how we're going to play the game. You know, certain days here, we're going to be more aggressive than others, and just to see how we're going to play the game on a daily basis. You know, you can have the same roster, but it's not the same team every day. You know, somebody might be banged up, and that day you feel that you can't run, and you have to just sit back and wait for the three-run homer. Other days, you're healthier than others, and you feel like you're going to put pressure on it. So, you know, it's a different day in baseball every day, but it's all about learning in this room.
I love that when he says, you can have the same roster, but you don't have the same team every day. I thought that was enlightening, and he's right. This guy's got a tight hammy today. He can't take the extra base. This guy's got a tight quad. He can't steal a base. This guy has a tight quad. He's not playing today, so now we've inserted a bench player that brings different dynamics to the team. You have the same roster, but you have a different team every day. You can be skewed towards being a manager that believes in running a lot. You can be skewed towards being a manager that believes in hitting home runs solely, you know, and driving the ball in the gap solely to create runs. And even though you have that lean and that skew, you have to be willing to adapt based on how your players are that day. I think that's an enlightened and informed observation from a guy who's making his first venture into the managing world. Continuing on with the Red Sox, David Price spoke about J.D. Martinez. They played together in Detroit. Has David Price contacted J.D. Martinez and tried to recruit him to Boston?
I've talked to him a couple times. And I told him we'd love to have him here. He knows that. And you know, he's going through his process. You know, you put in a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of hard work to get to the point to where these free agents are right now. And you usually only get to do it one time. So, you know, you want to make sure that you do it right. And you know, he's going through his process.
One, I like the music is over. Batting practice continues. One, I like what David Price is selling in the first day of spring training, the first 2 days of spring training. He appears to have a better attitude. He appears to be reflective, and I think that's important. I was critical of David Price last year. I think it was justifiably. I think it was justified. I think a lot of people were justifiably upset with Price last year and the negative impact he had on the team and a negative impact on the team's culture. He said the right things yesterday. It's going to take me a couple of months for me to believe that it's totally for real this season. And also, it's really easy to be optimistic when you penciled in to be one or two in the rotation. It's not as easy to be optimistic when you're struggling or injured, and those are the positions that David Price was in last year. I like that he tried to bring in J.D. Martinez to the fold. I like that he has done his job as a team leader, what we suspect should be a team leader. That's what team leaders do. They try to sell the organization. Just a good thing it's not the NCAA, because like Johnny Manziel, he'd be considered a booster for talking to J.D. Martinez, who's not on a roster right now. So that's it for batting practice, the best sound bites in sports. When we come back, Tom Curl, Plattsburgh State men's basketball coach. His team's won 15 in a row. If you're not paying attention, you better start. That's next, Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back to Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Look, we're all fixated on the UVM men's basketball team, and rightfully so. They've won 14 consecutive games. But did you know that there's another local college basketball team with actually a longer win streak than the Catamounts? That's right, the Plattsburgh men's basketball team has won 15 in a row. They're 18-4. They are dominating in the SUNYAC. So let's go out and learn more about the Cardinals on the phone line with head coach Tom Curl. Tom, how are you?
Good. How you doing today?
We're doing great, but we can't be doing as good as you guys. 15 in a row. You guys are, averaging 87 points a game. Every time I look, you guys are in the upper 80s and low 90s. How are you guys so good?
Well, we've got some upperclassmen that have really bought into their roles, and got some good leadership with the team. The really good students and really good kids, and it's a real good combination for success.
Now tell us about your team. I look at your point totals and I see 104, 97, 88, and I think, okay, run and gun team, they're going to get up and down the court and they're probably not going to play a lot of defense. But that's not the case. You guys are not only scoring a lot, you're holding teams in the 70s. How much of a commitment have you guys had on the defensive side too?
We're in the top 10 in the country in three-point field goal percentage defense. And I think that, you know, the game is so reliant upon that shot now that if you can defend it well, you've got to give yourself a pretty good chance to win. And we've made a real commitment to that. We've got some pretty long, athletic guys that, you know, we're convinced that with our schedule, teams are going to have difficulty beating us from the two-point field goal. So we really made a commitment to defending the three, and I think that that's given some teams some problems. The Division III level, the three-point shot's a huge weapon, and we've been able to take it away from people a little bit.
Now, is that what you're using offensively? Is that how the offensive numbers are getting so inflated? You guys have made a commitment to the three?
We're an inside-out team. We haven't shied away from getting the ball inside. We've got a 6'2" post player that's probably one of the stronger basketball players at any level in the country, John Patron. He bench presses 225 18 times. I mean, he's a strong man. We start with the ball going into through his hands in the post, and he's a willing passer, and that gets us a lot of three-point field goal attempts. But the ball, we made a commitment to getting the ball inside through our offense initially.
Now, you talk about the three-point shot being so key. How has the game evolved at the Division III level? You've been at Plattsburgh now. This is your 15th season. You coached at a couple of different spots before you were in Plattsburgh. How has the game continued to evolve?
Well, you know, it's a trickle-down from the NBA. Everything starts at the NBA, and you see a lot of pick-and-roll, pick-and-pop, guys getting to the rim and kicking out for threes. You know, analytics has become a part of it. I don't use analytics a whole lot, but, you know, I've been coaching a long time. We do things the way we've always done them. But all those factors come into play and people really use the three at every level now, really. But, you know, Division III tends to be a more skill-based level than athleticism sometimes. And you get some really, really pure shooting at our level. But it all trickles down. You see the Golden State Warriors made a commitment to the three, and that trickles right down to all levels. You know, the kids start playing and they want to emulate their heroes. Well, the heroes now are Steph Curry and Durant and all those guys. They can shoot the three. So the other influence, I think, that's coming to the game is a European influence. And, you know, now 10-20 years ago, you wouldn't dream of having a 6'9", 6'10" guy shooting threes. Now, if they can't shoot them, they can't get out of the floor.
Tom Curl, Plattsburgh State men's basketball coach. His team's won 15 straight. They'll take the floor on Friday night against Oneonta. And, Coach, that's going to be six consecutive home games for you to close out the regular season, and then you're going to get the Suniac tournament on your floor, too. What's it like having a run of home games here at the end of the season? Because that's a rarity.
Well, you know, last year we had our last six games were on the road. So, you know, our league schedule is such that it goes in cycles every other year. But that's the wisdom of our league scheduler, I guess. But it's been nice to have a lot of home games at the end of the season. But the fact of the matter is we had to win all our away games first semester to put ourselves into this position to, you know, secure home court advantage and have a good run at the end of the year.
You know, we always talk about how lucky we are to have great hockey in this area, from UVM to Norwich, Plattsburgh, Middlebury, men and women's. There's a lot of really good teams in hockey. But in men's basketball, we're looking at UVM, Middlebury, which is a 1-point number two in the country, and you guys who have won 15 straight. Just how good is the basketball here in northern Vermont and northern New York?
Well, I always say that if you don't get out to see a college basketball game at the three schools that you mentioned, you're missing the boat. And we have some athletes that play above the rim. And, you know, just we have some things that you watch games on TV, you can see those same things in our gym. And I know you can see them in Middlebury and Vermont's gym as well. But, and we, Eric Mack, for example, he's a once-in-a-lifetime type athlete. He's 6'3" and pins people's shot against the glass above the square and pulls down the rebound at the same time. I mean, it's freakishly athletic. And if you're a basketball fan and you're thinking that you can only see those things on TV, you're missing the boat. And get out to our gyms, you'll see some of those same things. And, you know, bring your kids to the games, too, because, you know, we've got some players that they could really that are pretty positive role models about just the way the game should be played. So if you haven't seen us play, I really think you're missing the boat, because you'd be impressed, I believe, by our level of skill and athleticism.
Coach, I want to hit you with some recruiting questions, because I'm always fascinated by it. You look up and down your roster, you've got a heavy New York City influence, and I know you've always had a heavy New York City influence. How is it that you're able to successfully recruit so well to the city? Because we're talking about a lifestyle that's much different between Plattsburgh and the city, and a pretty good distance, you know, 6-7 hours, and that's without traffic. How are you able to recruit so successfully to get some city kids into Plattsburgh?
Well, one thing I always convince the families, we're 4 hours and 20 minutes once you get past the George Washington Bridge.
But that might take you 4 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's 4 hours. You go 73 miles an hour. They're going to leave you alone. You get up here quick.
Yeah. So,
but we've always had the thing that people sometimes don't realize, that only 3.4% of all high school basketball players get to play at any level of college, Division I, II, and III. So in terms of the NCAA, so there's a lot of basketball players, and where are they? Most of them located are in New York City. So those kids need an opportunity. They appreciate the opportunity. They can come up and play basketball. They can get a real solid education. And the college in general is a very welcoming atmosphere for students from the city. So it's not like we're bringing basketball players from that area and they're the only students from the city at the college. They're very welcome here. It's a place that they're going to have a lot of people with similar interests to them. The basketball players have students from the city that come to a lot of the games. So it's not just the basketball program that has attracted the students from the city. It's the college as well, and it's a great place for them for kids from New York City to come up and feel comfortable and feel as though they belong.
Tom, I'll get you out of here on this. Look, I've heard the knocks on high school basketball in Vermont. I've heard the knocks on high school basketball in Northern New York. You look at your roster, you've got one player really from our coverage area, from Moriah. What does it take for a kid from the greater Plattsburgh area? What does it take for that guy to get noticed and maybe have a spot on your team in the future if people are listening in the car?
Well, you know, it's not that the quality is not there. Sometimes it's the competitive spirit, the competitive level, not spirit, but the competitive level. And, you know, there's a lot of AAU opportunities to get out and compete in tournaments outside of the area. I know that's become more prevalent in the past few years, but there's, you know, the kids locally from Vermont, the Vermont team, which included some kids from the New York area, won a national tournament in Orlando last year or 2 years ago. So that allows them to market themselves a little bit more effectively. There's no substitute for hard work, for commitment. I mean, one of the things that you see our guys, the guys that are our best players, they're on the shooting machine on a daily basis. They're working on their game constantly. And they don't get bored with excellence. They don't get bored. It doesn't become tedious for them. And there's no substitute for hard work when it comes to whatever your passion is, to delve into it, get into it, don't get tired of it, and understand that it's not all glory, it's not all fancy, it's not all greatness. Sometimes it's tedium, sometimes it's boredom, sometimes it's just constant doing it more and more and more, and getting and, you know, honing your craft a little bit. So there's just no substitute for that. There's no substitute for really working hard at your passion.
Tom Curl, Plattsburgh State men's basketball coach. They're 18-4. They've won 15 in a row. If you haven't gone over to Memorial Gym, you're going to want to. I've seen some of his teams play in the past, and they do play above the rim, and it is a fun watch over there in Plattsburgh. 15 in a row. They'll take on Oneonta on Friday as the Red Dragons come to town. Tom, best of luck, and hopefully we're talking to you guys again as we head into March.
Okay, Brady. Thank you a lot for calling, and appreciate it.
Appreciate you as well. Look forward to talking to you down the line also, Coach. So Tom Curl of Plattsburgh, hard to believe, man, 15 in a row. You got a 15 in a row game win streak. You got 14 in a row for UVM. You got Middlebury, that's a top 25 team, and last year made it all the way to the Elite Eight. So there is some really good basketball being played here in Northern New York and in Vermont as well. All right, that'll do it for us today. Thanks to Buster Olney for joining us in the huddle. Josh Sims, Fox 46 in Charlotte. Tom Curl here in Champlain Valley Game Night. You missed any of those interviews, you can find them online at 1013ESPN.com. Remember, trivia half hour from now, City Sports Grill in Colchester. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. go out, see Arnie and Beth on Valentine's Day. Tell them I sent you and tell them I said happy holiday to them. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. 101.3 ESPN.